Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with Brenda Mundrak. I apologize. Mudrak. I pronounced that wrong. Brenda, I'm so sorry. Brenda's a paranormal investigator of over 10 years, I do believe, it looks like, from your information here, that works with a partner. Of course, she has some unique perspectives that we're going to discuss today. Welcome, Brenda.
Welcome.
So it looks like you've been doing this for a little while. What got you into the paranormal?
When I was a kid, my aunt would go visit my aunt and uncle at their house, and they'd tell us about the activity they'd have at their house all the time. They had some really freaky stuff going on, like shadows and beds being kicked and everything, pots and pans. And it just intrigued me.
Well, that's, a lot of us start kind of the same way if you actually think about it. I know that I got into the paranormal originally from a personal experience when I was a child. I've heard either it ends up being that route or maybe a family member or something along those lines that collects the interest and gets the intrigue going, and then people kind of develop from there. I know you've developed your own unique way of doing things. You do work with some of the things that you've seen other investigators do, and you do some things on your own. Now, are both of you on your team mediums?
Well, I'm a sensitive empath. I don't know what do you consider yourself?
Sensitive.
Yeah, I guess we're just sensitive empaths.
Sensitive empaths. Being an empath, you probably have a unique hold compared to some people. I know I have an empath on a team that I work with, but I'm not an empath myself. So a lot of times we as standard investigators, we kind of walk into a situation blind compared to empathic abilities from time to time. So if you're comfortable, let's talk about that a little bit. What type of situations do you run into as an empath? I mean, when you go into a supposed haunted location, I'm assuming that you pick up on specific feelings, specific emotions, things along those lines.
Well, mainly it's like sometimes I remember one time I was at the Monroe House and I was standing there taking videos and I could like feel somebody standing behind me. And I didn't really think nothing of it because I thought it was the other investigator. Until I felt a hand on my shoulder and I turned around to see what she wanted, and she's all the way across the room and there's nobody behind me.
Interesting. Do you often get overwhelmed when you're in areas on emotions, kind of feel the pain, the sadness, the love or the anger, depending on the situation?
Sometimes, but not too often.
I know that a lot of empaths, I'm very limited on empaths and medium techniques, which is why I always ask when I have empathic people on the show, because it's a fascinating thing. I've had several empaths, several mediums that are on the show that have talked about it from time to time, and we're going to have a few more here within the next 2 or 3 months, so I'm always interested in that. But let's get into how you investigate a little bit and what you guys do when you're out there in the field. So I'm just going to kind of open it up for you to talk a little bit, maybe one of your best experiences, maybe something you guys had on your mind when you wanted to come on the show, things along those lines. So let's just kind of run with what you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, the first time I ever actually went out and investigated, there was a Fort Wayne group that did a lockdown of 3 of the sites in Fort Wayne. And I was surprised because for never doing this before, I had experiences in all 3 places, and it kind of surprised me.
Interesting.
And after that, I was just hooked.
Now, is it just you and your associate that go out and investigate for the most part, or do you work with other teams? Do you have other people on your team that aren't as
Yeah, so just me and Denise are in the team, but we do go out with other teams because some of those places are too expensive for us to do by ourselves.
Well, they are quite expensive. Some of them range anywhere from $1,200 to $1,500 or above. So if you don't have a group of people going, it's impossible to do, I assure you. Running a production agency, we've been limited quite a few times to either going with other teams or having to plan for the event because the cost is just so much, even when you're doing a film or you're doing a production, that you gotta really watch the budget, so to speak.
Especially when you're on disability.
Yep, nope, totally understandable there. But that limits you even more, of course, obviously. And even the larger locations, even then, it can be quite expensive. You're talking about somewhere between $80 to $150 just to have a seat sometimes. So,
Though
I understand why they do it. I mean, there's a lot of upkeep when you're starting dealing with large buildings and remodeling and doing everything that they do to try to keep it running. It's still very expensive to do. Even the smaller locations at $300 to $500 can be a little rough.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Post Town Elementary lived up to its little saying, when you leave, you believe, because that's exactly what it did for Denise.
Well, Post Town is a very unique place. I've had the privilege of being there many, many times. I'm going up there for the softball tournament, and I'm actually going to be working with Daryl to film his story a little bit while he's at Post Town Elementary. Listeners, just so that you know, Post Town Elementary is it's a school that has an incredible history behind it in Middletown, Ohio. Daryl Wissman is actually the resident at Post Town Elementary, and he does haunted investigations for the paranormal. I encourage you to look up Post Town School. It's under a few durations right now that may close it down to the public eventually in the next 2 to 3 years, so by all means support them, but it's a wonderful location. It goes by the statement, when you leave, you believe, and there are some very unique things that happen in Post Town. I know I've quite enjoyed not only the company of Daryl and the people there, but the school itself. I mean, it's extraordinary, especially when you get up into the teacher's rooms and the special ed room and a few other places.
Yeah, in the back hallway.
Yeah, I like to call it the creepy hallway.
Well, that's where we was at. I had the laser grid shining down there, and all of a sudden, it just kind of disappeared. And this being Denise's first time, I thought, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to see if she notices. Well, later, she looked at me and says, why is the hallway getting dark?
Yeah, there's a presence in that hallway, I think, that I've been down through there, and of course the principal's room's there. They had the cottage room there for a little while, and then he moved a lot of things out, but it gives you this feeling, if that makes sense. And once you sit into the principal's room, which is also where the little area on the interview room is, sometimes you can just, you know something's watching you.
Yeah. I got that at Loretta Lynn's Dude Ranch. And all I was doing was just taking the tour. And I'm standing there looking at this kitchen where they said that she had done her Wesson Oil commercials. And I'm standing there looking at it. Well, I thought that there's still people, the group was still in the room because I could feel people behind me. And then I turn around and look, and I'm all by myself in that room.
Well, that's an amazing thing to run into. I've never had the privilege of being at the Dude Ranch, but I hear that you're not the only one actually that's ran into a situation with that. I had a lady that I spoke to on a personal level, and she said that she was there and kind of had some weird, unusual feelings that somebody was following around as she was doing the tour. So it would be interesting to do an investigation there somewhere along the line.
I'd love to do a tour investigation. Mm-hmm. The Birdcage Theater, I was just taking a self-guided tour, and I was taking pictures of the brothel room. And all of a sudden, all I did was just turn from that room to the poker tables, and right in my ear, just clear as if somebody was standing there, a disembodied female voice went, hello? And there was nobody in that room at the time.
The Birdcage, I hear, is an outstanding place. We're scheduled to be there next year if everything works out right. we kind of tooled things down. I was on tour doing locations for almost, 5 months straight. So we went to a lot of different places, and we tagged along with teams to do the first part of telling people's stories with Generation Truth. And I took 3 or 4 months to kind of backtread a little bit to make sure that we were doing things right, got the production caught up, got the proper funding, of course, obviously, as a business association, and look for locations. So I'm really excited that they agreed to allow us to film there next year. I think it looks like an amazing location.
Just the history of it fascinated me.
Yeah, it's an amazing history. A lot of these locations have amazing histories. So just here in Ohio, Ohio State Reformatory, Lincoln County Jail, there's several well-known but shut down until recently. They're actually opening back up that are mansions and estates. When you get out through the edge of Tennessee, of course, obviously, you have a lot of massive, amazing locations down through there, from Weldon Manor to Bob Mackey's, Hales Bar Dam. There's just all kinds of amazing locations.
Oh, I've been to Bob Mackey's, too.
Yeah, I've been to Bob's twice now. Once was to write my book, and the second time was just to hang out with other investigators. But it's got a really interesting history to it.
Well, I was in that one. There's a little room off of the infamous well room that they use for a cell to lock up, I don't know, POWs or something. And I was just standing there watching them do the crystal thing. And all of a sudden, I just felt something like static electricity totally engulf my right arm. When I put my arm out in front of me to see how far it went, it was just like I put my hand in pudding. Like there was something standing in front of me.
Wow. Now, that's something interesting a lot of people don't talk about, but I have noticed within paranormal experiences a lot of times is the air will get deeper in specific areas. It's almost as if you go from a normal feeling to, like you said, it's kind of like a pudding or a slow feeling. You just know something else is present in the room, as if all of the energies change around you, whether it be electromagnetic or whatever it is. It becomes a very unique situation. And that's something most investigators don't talk about, so I'm kind of glad that you brought that up, actually. Now,
well,
while you're out there,
they're watching them do the crystals. I wasn't even participating, and yet whatever it was was standing next to me for some reason.
We're probably curious on what they were doing. Yeah, if you think about it a lot, well, if I were a ghost, a lot of these people try unique methods. They use crystals, or they use table tipping, or the odd time where somebody uses a Ouija board, even though a lot of people don't use them, a lot of people do use them. Sometimes circles and joining and so forth. I mean, if I was a ghost from a different period in time and I didn't know what you were doing, I'd probably stand right behind everybody, just kind of like you said, I'd be standing by you looking at them going, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Again, I apologize for coughing, listeners, and for apologize ahead of for coughing on you guys. I've caught some sort of little bug with this warm weather that's kicking in here, so allergies and so forth, I think, are finally getting to me a little bit. I know that you operate a little bit differently than some paranormal teams because you carry a little bit more, and I like this fact. I think a lot of teams should. You carry a little bit more of a code of ethics, so to speak. So let's talk about how you operate when you're out on an investigation, what you look for, how you go about things, and how you do things.
Okay. Well, usually when we go to an investigation, we don't really go in expecting to find ghosts. We go in trying to find answers, and we try to debunk any claims that we can. Because I know that was my second investigation of the Monroe Street house. I went in there totally just to debunk every claim. And I was doing a pretty good job until we walked up to the upstairs. And we walked into the little girl's room, I guess where the fire was and all that.
Uh-huh.
And the radio's playing. Now, the three of us were downstairs and nobody was upstairs, but yet that radio was playing. So that was, and we couldn't figure that one out. And then later on, we were out at the fire pit, and I had decided I was going to go in and put an audio recorder in the basement. Well, I go to the back door, and we had all the lights on in the back room, so I could see that there was nobody in that room. But yeah, when I open that back door, a crack, I hear this disembodied male voice go, boop. It's like that, almost like he was letting me know you standing there.
So the Monroe House is actually quite unique. I've had the privilege of being there a few times myself, and I can't say I picked up a lot of evidence, but it does seem like the upstairs has a little bit of activity to it, especially when you get to the little girl's room and down the end of the hallway. It's a very unique experience. Well,
yeah.
Listeners, you're listening to BBS Radio. We're talking to Brenda and her associate. BBS Radio is one of the largest radio stations here in digital America, so make sure if you're going to go with the best on digital radio, go with BBS. Before we pause for advertisements, Generation Truth is actually moving beyond the paranormal here this summer and next summer. We're going to be taking on some documentary pieces about real individuals, real life situations, and so forth. We're actually taking a bit of a stance in advertisement that you're going to be seeing on TV throughout next year called Three Steps Back. I won't get into a lot of details about it, but I will tell everybody social media is a unique place. We've all been there. We've all seen situations, and we've all seen how social media affects people's lives. The goal of Three Steps Back is to remind everybody that we're all human beings, and humanity in whole should take three steps back from time to time. We're going to take a brief pause here, and Donald's going to run a few advertisements, and we're going to pop right back on the air with Brenda and go through the next 30 minutes as we talk about situations and her paranormal experiences with her team. We'll be right back. We'll talk to you soon.
Ever thought of becoming a talk show host? Or felt a need to share your knowledge with others? Record your thoughts, your interviews, your guests, and discoveries in a setting where you can ask questions, any question of anyone on any topic? Well, here you can effortlessly interview the most famous and the most infamous right at your doorstep. Become a radio host on BBS Radio. On BBS Radio, and join our family. Well then, become a show host on BBS Radio and join our family. Just email contact@bbsradio.com.
Welcome back to Paranormal Truth and Reality. We are with Brenda Mudrack and her associate from the paranormal. They've been investigators for over 10 years, and we're actually going over a little bit about some of the experiences they've had at locations. So we're just going to kind of pick up where we left off and discuss a little bit more about what you guys are comfortable talking about. I know you've written a couple of books on your experiences, so you may want to actually talk about where the folks can find those books as well.
Basically, I just got like a Facebook page right now where you can find my books, or I go to conventions to try to sell them.
Now, you're going to be at the Mid-South Convention here in Kentucky, I think, at the end of July, I do believe.
I'd like to if I can get the money together for it.
It's definitely a unique experience. Even if you're coming up to stop by, go ahead and come up, stop by. Paranormal Truth and Reality will be up there. We're working with the past teams, actually, so we're going to be talking closely with Brandon Kurtzner. I'll be glad to put a couple of books out for you and see if we can't sell them.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would.
We'll definitely actually help you out if you're up there. It shouldn't be much of a problem at all. It's pretty easy to find me. I'm going to be the guy that's got the Texas hat on, and he's going to be walking around with the Generation Truth hat, so you can't really miss us. I'm going to have, hopefully, most of the team up there so that we can associate with Generation Truth and tell everybody about the project. So now, do you guys have a YouTube channel currently?
I have kind of a... my own channel, but I haven't really set one up for paranormal researchers. I just put whatever evidence on my channel.
Well, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, obviously. A lot of people, I think,
have gotten too used to social media, if that makes sense, when it comes to YouTube and so forth. It's a great avenue for investigators to communicate with each other. So I'm not downtrending it in any way possible. But if you're anything like me, I started an investigation years ago, and we didn't have the benefit of computers back then. So a lot of what we do, we cataloged, we oriented on our own, we reviewed the evidence, we collected it as we could, and we associated with teams locally in events and situations like that. So even though I'm on digital radio, I don't spend a lot of time doing anything on YouTube with a lot of my evidence because I'm just still getting used to it. It's been with me for about 11 years, and I'm still getting used to it. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, I've had this computer since I had my first Windows 95. I'm still getting used to it.
Well, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think the older generation, it takes us a while to get used to technology, as silly as that seems. It took me a while to get used to even the new operations in radio. I got used to being behind a mic in a studio and doing things a specific way. Well, nowadays, we're in a studio. But I can be in a studio and still have operations go worldwide just by somebody in another state operating things, which is wonderful compared to the old days. I mean, we've got plenty of things we could discuss here. I'm just going to kind of open it back up to you guys a little bit. And do you have anything specific that you were thinking about speaking about here tonight when it comes to investigations, what you'd like to get out to the public? A lot of people that are listening are not investigators. They're just interested in the paranormal. So I like to bring investigators in virtually every time I can, because that way they understand why you guys do what you do, how you do it, and they can take advice before they just go jumping on watching a ghost show and going, hey, I can do that too.
Well, the first thing I would tell people is don't go in expecting to find ghosts, because 9 times out of 10 you'll be disappointed. But I go in most of the time, most of the places I just go into, I just go in just to see what's there, and I don't really expect to find anything, but that's usually when I find stuff.
Well, that's generally the way it works. Listeners, so that you're aware, a lot of times when you're dealing with the paranormal, it's not the way it's portrayed a lot of times on TV. Not that TV shows do a bad thing. I have wonderful friends in the television industry. I was just speaking to one overnight a couple of nights ago on some non-related facts, but they only have an hour to put things together. And of course, obviously, you as watchers have to watch something interesting. The reality is, in the paranormal, when you're out there, we can sit out there for, when you deal with the setup, you deal with the walk around, you learn the building, and you finally get moving, 10 hours at a location and still get absolutely nothing.
Or get 30 seconds.
Or get 30 seconds. And generally, that might pipe up at the last moment when you're packing everything up. So it's not something that, I mean, everybody gets a, I like to say you get a different aspect of the way it really is. There's a lot of people that think there's a real thrill in it. There's a real chance to see ghosts. There's a real chance to run into the things that you're scared of. And, you know, I've been in this for 23 years, and though I have ran into a handful of things, in fact, I can count it on my hand, that I would not recommend that people associate or go against, unless you know what you're doing. And that's when you back off and you just say, hey, look, this is for somebody else. I'm going to make a few phone calls, let them deal with it. But the reality is, in 23 years of doing this, I haven't really ran into very many scary or bad things, except for my own shadow from time to time where I jump.
I've only ran into one thing that scared the crap out of me, and it didn't really scare me because it threatened me. I was afraid for a friend of mine. There's a friend of mine, Amy Jo, and she did a Bloody Valentine at the Willow's Weep house. And we was in there because she was going to show us the creepers that always creeped on the walls. Well, after a while, Well, first of all, it's like so pitch black in there, you can't see your hand in front of your face, literally. So after about an hour, she said, well, let's go in the garage and warm up, and we'll talk about what we experienced. Well, she turned around to go out the door, and she says, there's something blocking me. I can't find the door. So I turn to the sound of her voice, and right there in front of me was this pasty white, demonic face with black eyes and gnarly teeth. And it just like it, I just kind of stared at it because I thought, well, maybe my eyes need to adjust. But the more I focused on it, the more it just stood there and stared back at me. And then it spoke to me, which I'd never had anything do that before. But it wasn't like audible words, and it wasn't like in words in my head. It was like telepathy. And it said, you can't have her. She's mine. And I knew it was talking about my friend. And I got scared for her because she was so obsessed with that house. But after that night, between me and another investigator, we convinced her that she needed to stay away from that house. And that's the only time I ever saw something that really scared me.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't really, I've had a few experiences that I don't share. Most of them were not at major locations, believe it or not. The scariest things that ever happened to me were generally residential investigations. I had the privilege of working with a residential team, and it was actually more of a research team than anything else because it was a lot of college universities that were working together through the International Paranormal Society of Investigations at the time, which has now disbanded after parapsychology dropped and so forth. And my job was actually just an interviewer. So I would go in and do the pre-interviews. We'd set up the video camera, set up the recorder, sit with the residents, let them tell their stories a little bit while the investigating scientists, so to speak, at this point, because this is way far back when I first started, would go into the rooms and they would set up everything. And then, of course, I would leave. And I think the scariest situation I ever had was when I was doing an interview. And I remember saying to the lady at the time, do you believe that there's an entity or ghost here? Because it was one of the things on the list that we had to ask. And she said, I believe there's something very evil here. And sometimes it just simply doesn't like anything that goes on in the home when it revolves around myself or my children as if it wants us. And I remember giggling for a little bit in the back of my head. And I said the comment, perhaps we can stop that. And then almost immediately something flew right off the wall towards my shoulder. and it was, okay, this one is something I don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
You know, outside of that, I've seen a couple other things I generally don't share hanging out with other teams and being a part of that early research. But it's something that's very, very rare, listeners. You don't walk into every location and you don't really get scared much. Except for the fact when your own mind starts to play with you. Now, I have jumped at many, many shadows. In fact, I jumped at a few at Posttown Elementary. I did an isolation in the principal's office. And at one point, I jumped. And we weren't getting communication. I found absolutely nothing on EVP, nothing on the video reviews, except for my own self. And it was more or less just the effect of the situation. You know, you're right down that scary dark hallway, all the lights are off, you turned off everything, and you're just sitting there with a night vision camera pointed at you, and you can't see 2 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
So it definitely is a unique situation. You went to the Rhodes Hotel, I do believe, at one point too, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been there several times. But Denise is the only one that ever got called a nasty name.
I haven't had the privilege of going to the Rhodes yet, but I hear that there is a nasty man, I guess you could say, is the way they explain it a lot of times. And he's not very friendly with females, is he?
No. He called me, I was walking down the stairs at the Rhodes Hotel, and he called me an ugly whore.
Wow.
We caught it on tape.
Now, do you guys use digital recorders, or do you use standard old-fashioned tape recorders. I use both, believe it or not, because I started in the old school where we didn't have the privilege of having digital. So I carry a digital recorder and I carry a small cassette recorder with me.
Well, I was using an audio recorder, but that, for some reason, quit working when we was at Randolph County Infirmary, so I may have to go to my tape recorder, my little micro tape recorder.
Little micro digital recorders, they're handy. But it took me a while to jump into some of the new situations. And I'm still, being from an audio background, I'm still very questionable on some things. But I know a lot of people use SB7 now. They use a lot of current telephone apps and things along those lines. And SB7 does have unique responses from time to time. I know that we used one quite recently at Post Town after a convention with several people. I'm sure they wouldn't mind me mentioning their names, Joel Myers, Shannon Humphreys. We had actually a fairly famous gentleman from the Mastersons that was up there with us at the time. And we got it. We carried on a whole conversation through that. We even did an isolated incident where we took the SB7 and we plugged it into headphones so that only the person could speak out the words that they said and the conversation continued. And it was a very unique experience.
Yeah. We've never done an isolation thing.
It's unique. I did some early on and I totally forgot about it until Shannon and the person that she brought along did it. But it brings in another perspective in, because only the person with the headphones can hear the responses. So they shout out what they think they hear while you're asking questions, having conversations and so forth. So it brings a whole new concept to it.
Huh. Well, we was in at the Rhodes Hotel. We was that one room that they call the drunk man's room. We both walked into the closet, and as soon as we both walked in that closet, we both heard this disembodied female voice scream. And I just looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, "Did you just hear that?"
Yeah, the first time we were going to go to Rhodes Hotel, I had a dream the night before. I dreamt of a preacher in an old, like, Western garb. And when we went to the hotel the next day, there was a force in the doorway, and I could not get into the preacher's room.
Wow.
We had, about seven people with us at that time. Everyone else went in and examined it, but I couldn't get past the doorway.
Did it tell you to get out, too?
Yeah, it did tell me to get out.
Well, I would say something definitely didn't like you there at that moment in time, so to speak. You guys actually had an incident at Waverly Hills, too, from the information that you sent me, where one of your walkie-talkies was communicating at one point.
Yeah, we was headed up to the chapel room. One of the tour guides was leading us up there because I didn't want to try it by myself. I was afraid I'd get lost. And I had my video recorder going, my full-spectrum recorder going. And we're walking up there, and all of a sudden, from the walkie-talkie, we hear the other investigator's voice loud as can, just as clear as a bell, say, "Forever." Well, when I got on the walkie and I called to her and I asked what she meant by that, she says, "I didn't say anything like that." And nobody else with their walkie-talkies didn't hear anything. But the three of us, all three, heard a voice come over that walkie say, "Forever."
We actually had an experience similar to that when we were filming alongside Paranormal Journeys Into the Unknown at the Ohio State Reformatory. We were down in an area that nobody had investigated yet, and the team themselves had decided to go into, it's kind of a little tunnel cave that they drug themselves into. So me and my film assistant, or my actual film partner at the time, Joel Myers, were investigating outside around the area. And we had the walkies on, and I thought it was a walkie or an echo going on because they were communicating with the command center to find out what was going on left and right. And I could have heard, I heard footsteps, and then I heard lights out.
Huh.
And I thought, huh, did somebody say that? And I looked at Joel and said, did you hear something? Well, I heard something. I very distinctively heard the word lights out. And I get back to them, and they tell me, nope, nobody was on the walkies at the time. We didn't hear anything. So it's kind of unique how these things can jump in and utilize almost anything from time to time.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Nothing has kind of freaked me out more than, I'm a home care nurse, so I go to people's homes and I take care of them. And I've never worked in a haunted house before, but I do now. I mean, I was sitting there that one time, and I was just waiting for the next shift nurse to come in. And I look across to the kitchen door, and there's these two old women standing there. And I'm like, I looked again, and they're just standing there. So when the person that I take care of, her sister came home, I just casually walked into the bathroom and just went, I think I saw your two aunts, and she wanted me to tell her to describe them to her. Well, I described them to her, and her mouth dropped open. She says, you just described my two aunts to a T. And wow. I'd never seen any pictures of them at all.
Well, that's actually an experience most people don't get a chance to have. So that's really cool, actually. Now, when you were at the Monroe House, you actually caught, I like to call him the Grimler.
Yeah.
You know that your team and maybe three or others are the only one that's actually caught that little face.
Really?
Yeah, I like to call him the Grimler because he's a gremlin-like shaped face, kind of weird looking.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. And I could kick myself up one side, down the other, because I accidentally deleted it from my camera.
And it's always near the little crawl space areas. It's almost as if they don't move from that, so to speak.
Yeah, because I had my night vision cameras aimed at the crawl space when I turned it on, and it was there when I turned it on, and then I panned to the left, and then when I panned back, it was gone. And even though I accidentally deleted it from my camera, I did get two people saw it. I showed it to Rocky Foreman from Living Dead Paranormal, and I showed it to Eddie, the owner. So I do have evidence. I do have two witnesses.
Validation.
Validation of it.
I would guess Eddie probably wasn't very surprised because he's probably heard that story 1,000 times by now. A lot of people have talked about seeing the Grimler. Like I said, I like to call him Grimler. I don't know. They've given him thousands of different names, but a lot of people have talked about seeing something right in that little area. But very few people have had the chance to capture it. I noticed when you put that in there, I'm like, hey, I know that story because I've spoken to several people that have caught the same thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so pat yourselves on the back. You guys, even though you didn't get to keep the evidence, you're one of the only people that have caught in that evidence. I think I can count maybe 3 or 4 people out of the 500 or 600 that have claimed to see it from time to time.
Great. Wow, that's neat.
Yeah. One of those little things that you love to hear from time to time. And one of those little things that you always hit yourself on the back for. I have a story similar to that. I was at a very famous place in Louisiana. And for some reason, it's slipping my mind, and I've been there 12 times, but it's the Mansion House where Marie Laveau killed the family. And then, of course, she's buried on the property. And
it was Myrtle's Plantation. I don't think
Myrtle's, yep.
Huh?
Myrtle's. That's exactly what it is. Myrtle's. I left the mansion not getting a lot of things, but we went back to our hotel room, and I felt weird, so I put the EVP recorder on, and I remembered asking, is there anybody in here? Not expecting to get anything. And then I played it back afterwards, and it said Marie LeBeau.
Oh.
So I said, well, I'm going to try this a little bit more. So I recorded it one more time, and you know where Myrtle's is if you've ever been there. It's about 5 miles out or so is where the hotels and everything you can stay at. And I played it back again, and I said, are you here with me? And it said, Marie LeBeau is in the house with Chris.
Mm.
And it was the coolest thing I'd ever heard.
Wow. That's...
Unfortunately, I brought it back home, and my kid managed to play around with the recorder and erased the whole thing.
Oh. Yeah. That's when you kick yourself.
Yeah, you kick yourself in the butt. But, you know, it's one of those things you can say, hey, at least it makes a great story and I got something while I was there. Because Myrtle's is a wonderful place. It's a beautiful place to go.
I'd like it's to got go a, time.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. Keep an eye on my Facebook, because when I release my website, we'll have a lot of release dates and so forth. And we do a lot of different things when we're filming the paranormal. We film a lot of different things with culture, but when we're filming the paranormal, we go to a lot of locations. A lot of times when we do that to reduce costs, we invite investigators along. So if you can afford it at the time, you're welcome to, you know, once you see the post go up, you're welcome to say, hey, look, I want to go, and then we'll just put you right into the mix, and you guys are welcome. We're planning on doing Myrtle's. I have Ohio State Reformatory August 26th, which I think there are still seats on. We're going to be doing Waverly several times. Bob Mackey's obviously is in the mix during this period in time, and a lot of other famous locations from time to time that we're going to be filming on. So I love investigators to come along, and you guys are always welcome to look into it and ask us about our events and say, hey, look, if you have a seat, you know, how much is it going to cost? Sometimes if we've already got it paid for, it's, we just need the seats, come along.
That'd be great.
So is that all a part of it?
Pages?
The name of the company is Generation Truth. The website will be coming out here in the next 2 months. I've been retooling the whole thing. It'll be generationtruth.com. And, of course, you can look me up on Facebook. My name is Christopher Houston. My partners are Jay Pierce, Joel Myers, Joe Cole, and so forth, which are all available at any point in time. And Brandon Kirchner, obviously, has just came on board with us. Brandon is a part of the PAST team. PAST has 350 teams nationwide. So I'm excited about filming some of those teams. Of course, PAST and Generation Truth are two different things, but wonderful bunch of people.
What was that? Dangerous what?
It's generationtruth.com.
Oh, Generation Truth.
Yep.
The word got dangerous. I do know one thing. If I'd have known what was in Willow's Weep at the time, I would have never. I got brave that one, on that one investigation at Willow's Weep. I was going to be a Zach Bagans. I went in there by myself. Because I just wanted to see what would happen. Well, nothing was really going on. And then I decided to go sit in this one chair that everybody claimed that something knocked this one big guy out. So I was going to sit in and see what happened. Well, nothing knocked me out of the chair, but after a while, I just felt like hands on my chest pressing so hard it was hard for me to breathe.
Wow. I haven't had the privilege of actually filming with Zach. I managed finally within
me
the
neither.
Past.
I was going to play like him. He always goes in those places all by himself, so I was going to be brave like him. But that was the first
wonderful privilege
time
of finally
I
talking to him one time. He seems like a great guy.
I'd never had anything walk through me before, but Willow's Weep, that was the first time something just walked through me. It was like totally electrified from my head to my foot. I just felt something walk through me like static electricity.
Wow. I've had that happen a couple of times, actually, that it's unique again that you bring that up. Ohio State University actually this year or next year is going to be working with Paranormal Research Ohio, which is one of my founding groups, in a study for that, because that that is actually something that a lot of investigators have ran into, kind of a static feeling, a cobweb feeling when you're walking into a location.
Yeah. Well, I've had the cobwebs several times, but I'd never felt like a static electricity if something passed through me.
It's a unique experience. I had it happen once, and it kind of makes you stop for a moment. It's almost as if you're stunned.
Well, it made me stop. It's like, what just happened?
It definitely. I could understand that. I go into places all the time by myself. I isolate myself from time to time. I'm not really, I've been doing this for so many years that I'm not really that scared, to be honest with you, anymore. I probably should be, but.
Well, in all honesty, it taught me, it cured me of being afraid of the dark.
Seriously, it does.
Obviously, it cured me of being afraid of the dark.
It most definitely does. A lot of times, actually, when you first do this, listeners, to kind of backtrack a little bit, when you first do this, when you're going into a creepy location, and the creepier, the more it gets to you, you just get overwhelmed with feelings that have nothing to do with ghosts, is the easiest way to explain it. And a lot of that is being scared of the dark, the things around you. You're in a damp, moldy, or musty environment, or you're in an area where you already know is haunted or scary or whatever it is, whether it be a cave, a jail cell like Ohio State Reformatory, a patient room like Waverly Asylum, whatever it is. When you're sitting there by yourself walking into the situation in pitch black, in middle of the dark, and all you have is a flashlight, you tend to get scared.
Well, that the very first, very first investigation I went on, like I said, was the one. It was three of the locations in Fort Wayne, and we met at the one. And I'm sitting there in my car waiting for everybody to show up. Well, after a while, I thought, well, maybe they're inside. I walked up to the back door, and I just kind of opened the door. And I saw a light at the end of the hall and the gymnasium. I thought, well, maybe they're all in there. And I'm walking up there. I get to the end of the hall. There's nobody in there. And all of a sudden, right when I got to the gymnasium, the security alarm went off in the building. And I'm like thinking, okay, I'm not supposed to be in this place. But after I ran out of the room, after I ran out of the building and tried to, I didn't want to be around when the cops showed up, because that was a security alarm that went off, but it didn't go off until I walked all the way up to the gymnasium. And when everybody gets there, and the sergeant that was there taking us on a tour, he actually had to unlock the back door. And I'm like thinking, okay, this is not right, because I didn't unlock it. I just pulled it open. And then he tells us, well, that's happened to several people.
Wow.
But that was like, well, that was also the place where I went. I went to take pictures inside the locker room. Well, I got to the door. There was like something standing, some invisible force standing right there at the door and wouldn't let me in. Everybody else was going in and getting pictures, but it would not let me go in that locker room, shower room.
Huh. Well, maybe it, you know, that begs a question sometimes when you run into that. Sometimes it's something that doesn't want you there, and sometimes it may be something that just simply doesn't want you there for your own benefit. It depends on each individual situation, I guess, and how you feel about the situations. But I just had that discussion with somebody, actually. She had a similar situation like yours that happened, but the room was, well, it was very notorious for not liking females. And everybody else got into the room, but she couldn't get into the room for the life of her. It was as if the door was totally locked and she couldn't get in. And the people on the other side just opened it right back up, said it wasn't locked the whole time. So I told her, well, maybe something just knew you were a female and the other two, three people who were in there were guys. It was telling you, hey, you don't want to go in there. So I know we've talked about a lot of individual things, and we're trolling down to the last 10 to 15 minutes of the show. So I'd like to actually get in here a little bit about what the, I know we've talked about your digital recorder and you've done a little bit with SB7, but being paranormal investigators and being a smaller team, a lot of times that gives you an advantage. So before we close the show, and it looks like we're down to probably maybe 5 minutes. I apologize, listeners. I miscalculated there. But before we close the show with next week, let's talk a little bit about what other devices you use.
Basically, we just use like the Avalis. That's really what we've gotten most hits of since we started, since I got it. Well, that was actually what Denise was using when it called her a homely whore. And a B, wow. And B word. Whoever we was talking to at Rhodes Hotel did not like her.
Nope. Well, the obvious definitely is a very unique situation, I will say that. Listeners, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality here on BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest radio stations digital-wise here in the United States of America. So remember, if you want to go with the best, go with BBS. We've been talking to Brenda Mudrack and her associate, and I apologize, I had her name up in front of me, but I don't have her name anymore, so you can feel free to mention that at the last few minutes of the show. What's the name of your team?
Paranormal Researchers.
And the name of your partner?
Denise Hilton. Denise was actually the one that came up with the name, because when she came up with it, she got, that's really what we are, researchers, and she even went on line, and there was no other team named that.
Was that something else on it?
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to both of you. You're always welcome to come back on. Feel free to contact myself or my assistant if you decide to do so, and we'll have you on anytime. You can feel free to look up Generation Truth and myself as we're at locations, and we'd be glad to have you again. In closing, as I do every week, I'm going to say a couple of things this week, actually, from the experiences as a growing pain from Generation Truth. I want to encourage people, when the campaign starts, take 3 steps back. I want you to take a look at the TV videos that are going to be out, and I want you to take a real look at the videos that are going to be online, because these are real circumstances from real people on how social media can affect you and life can affect you, because we're all human. And that's the key of everything. Remember, everybody, in America, no matter the situation, things can resolve. We're all just human beings. And as you know, in the paranormal world, in the paranormal, truth should always be that reality. You've listened to two very exciting paranormal investigators as we've talked about their experiences tonight. And remember, the best way to learn is to ask those investigators yourself before assuming while watching television shows, media, or anything else. The investigators are where you should go. Learn your education from there. Ask the questions. Tag along with them. Well, that's Paranormal Truth and Reality. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your weekend. It's been a wonderful show.